Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity War, where we sit around, chat with our buddies, and anxiously wait for our name to be called, preferably for a meeting with God, not to be called to enter the elevator across the hall with the big red scary numbers and descend seven levels for an altogether different appointment. I'm Chris Adams.
And I'm Nick McKinnon.
And what have you been up to, Nick?
I've been putting together a playground in my backyard for my kids. It is way harder than what I thought it was going to be. Probably about once every 15 minutes, my daughter turns to me and says, "Daddy, do you think we need to ring some builders to put it together yet?"
Did you throw the manual away doing that blokey thing of, "I can do this"?
There is absolutely no way that I could do this without the manual.
Okay. Well, I've been just trying to stay indoors because we've had scorching heat here and I'm a little bit burnt because I went on a summer retreat for a bunch of young people for the past few days on the beach. So I had to do a lot of, well, if you call that work.
You said young people though.
Yeah, that's a bit of work.
That's work.
They were great, but it has been very hot. And on today's Eternity Ward, we are actually contemplating eternity, an eternity of that burning, hot, fiery type of hell. And we've asked someone to come and, I guess, turn the heat up on us a bit. So can you introduce our guest, Nick?
I can. Our guest this week, I'm going through my Rolodex. Last week it was my father. Now I'm bringing on people I grew up with. This week it's another Baptist pastor. This week we're having Maddie Svoboda, who I spent some time in similar youth Baptist circles growing up, doing youth training sort of stuff together. And Maddie was always a really deep, thoughtful, interesting bloke and the sort of person that you would want to have a meaningful conversation with if you ever got the opportunity. So not too long ago, Maddie, well, actually, it's probably a while ago now. God, we're old. A while ago now, Maddie became a pastor himself. And has been a Baptist pastor for, I don't know, 10 years?
Yeah, 9 years. It'll be 10 years next year.
Yeah, we're old.
Long service leave.
Woo. Oh, there we go. I've been keeping track of Maddie and we're friends on Facebook. And about, I don't know, this time last year or so, Maddie posted up on his Facebook page asking for questions around hell. He let it be known that he was going to be doing a sermon on hell. And hell is something I've been fascinated with for a long time, working out how does that fit with a loving God. Like last week, we were talking about how the violence in the Old Testament makes sense with a loving God, and hell was another one of those sort of ones that I went, well, how does it make sense to have this punishment of eternal damnation for a lot of people with a loving God? So it was another one of those issues that I was super interested in hearing the thoughts of a thoughtful person who I knew wouldn't just be railing and loud and obnoxious, but would actually be thoughtful and deep and intelligent and articulate. So I think I sent a couple of questions and I waited very excitedly for the sermon to pop up. I listened to it, went, this is really interesting. And it was really different to what I expected Maddie to put up. Presumably not many of the people listening to this will have heard it, but we'll put a link up. Mm. And I really recommend people to listen to it if you're interested in hell, because it's a really thoughtful piece and we'll get into that. But yeah, so we had a fairly long conversation after that about some of the questions I had, and Maddie was gracious enough to respond, and I just thought it was an awesome conversation. And then when we started doing these podcasts, I thought, oh, hello. I know someone that would be good to get on. That's how we got to this place. Does that sound about right, Maddie?
Yeah, pretty much bang on. It was good to have those conversations about it, and I always enjoy catching up with people who are genuinely interested, and whether they agree or disagree, but are just happy to have the chat. And yeah, I really enjoyed it, and it's cool to have this opportunity. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for coming on.
No worries.
That was a very long introduction, Nick.
Sorry.
Before we get to all of that, Maddie, I want to find out just a little bit about your own story. So, you know, you've been a pastor for nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
What's your journey with faith? How did you end up coming to that? Were you brought up in a Christian family sort of thing?
No, not at all. So my mum went to a youth group. Turns out a youth group of the church that I'm now pastoring, which is a little bit strange. It is Tasmania. And my dad was quite against it. And so I didn't really have a lot of connection with Christians. One guy in kinder who was kind of a school nerd, who turns out to be my best friend these days. So I didn't really know much about that at all, and was kind of getting to know some people in high school that this whole new idea of Christianity kind of came into my world. And I'd heard a lot of stuff about Dad, about how judgmental and how hypocritical and all that kind of jazz, but these people seemed genuinely caring and cool and liked metal music and all the stuff that I was into, played basketball. And so I was like, I just enjoyed hanging out with them. And then it was through playing basketball with them. It was in a Baptist league. So in Launceston, there's a league for the Baptist churches and other churches around Launceston. And part of the requirement of that is you had to go to church once a month, which I didn't get told when I got invited. So I just felt a bit conned into that, actually.
No one goes once a month. You know that now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, absolutely. And so I went along and started to hear some of these ideas and talk with people, and ended up kind of made some kind of commitment, but it was a commitment based on the idea that once you find Jesus, everything in life becomes magical and beer and Skittles and there's no more problems. And that didn't happen. And so I went, oh, screw this. This is not what I signed on for. And kind of walked away again. And it was 18 after, you know, a really wild night went wrong, that kind of realized that there's got to be more to life than getting trashed. And so that led me down the road of exploring who this Jesus guy was and what he stood for. And that was kind of the start of that. So that, yeah, it's been about 16 years of following Jesus as best as I can, as flawlessly as I do. So, yeah.
As flawlessly as you do. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, everyone makes mistakes. So, hopefully none of my church hear that. So. But yeah. So that's a bit of my journey there.
That's cool. I played a little bit of Baptist League, and I never in a million years would have thought anyone would come to church through the Baptist League. So it's interesting hearing that story.
Yeah, yeah. That was the most violent basketball league I've ever been a part of, actually. There were more brawls in that league than I'd ever in any league I've ever played in. So
yes. Confirmed.
Times. Yeah.
Why is that? Where does that violence come from? What's that about?
My theory is that competition does something to them and they just go nuts. I got nothing else apart from that. Like, people that I kind of had went to church with and really respected were running in for brawls. I'm like, whoa, what just happened? Like, I'm the token heathen on this team and I'm the only one sitting on the bench. So...
That's because everyone else can pray for forgiveness afterwards.
Well, valid point.
One of my friends, he had to have knee reconstruction like 30 times, and he swears that the first time it happened was one of the pastors from a church in Launceston took him out.
Oh, so if he ain't going to church. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I like it.
You don't play basketball, do you, Chris?
Not really, no. Yankee sport.
Really? What was the nationality of the person that invented it?
Canadian? I don't know.
Yeah, damn it. Yeah, it was Canadian.
I think that's what I seem to remember a little bit of history. You know, I grew up on AFL and cricket. So we're not going to turn into a podcast about basketball because I'm going to put a stop to that. Let's get to the actual topic at hand. From my understanding, Maddie, so you've been a pastor for, what, 8 or 9 years at this point when you developed this sermon that Nick and I both listened to. You had to do a whole bunch of research into Howell. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Where did the idea come from to do a sermon on hell?
So one of the things that I've always been really interested in the idea of in churches was letting congregations dictate a sermon series so they could ask questions about what they were interested in instead of the pastor always going, this is what you should be interested in. And so I did one series in my first year there, and it was my second year around. And I just would say to people, look, write on your pieces of paper what kind of things you would like to hear a message on. You always know there's going to be some interesting stuff that comes in, but one of the ones that came in was hell. And I stopped and I thought about it, and I'd only ever really heard one sermon on hell, which I railed against quite strongly.
Why did you rail against it? What was that about?
So it was kind of my first church growing up, and my mum had just come out as gay, and this guy was talking about hell, and then he mentioned homosexuals in that. And when you know someone, your interest gets piqued. And he basically said along the lines that there is a special place in hell for homosexuals, which I don't know if I really heard too much after that.
Yeah, I reckon.
Was just filled with this anger and disgust and just couldn't comprehend by what kind of place would a homosexual receive special interest. Like, you know, you go over there, like you're really going to enjoy what we've got for you over there. Like that was different to what made that worse. And so it kind of set me on a bit of like, I want to do everything I can to disprove this horrible idea. And so that was kind of, I hadn't really heard too much about it. And now I think it's one of the things that pastors are a little bit scared to take on sometimes. And having prepared for it, I can understand why. So that's kind of how that came about.
How old were you when that happened?
I was 22, 23. So it was about 10 years ago now.
Okay.
In the sermon, you talked about how preparing for the sermon tore you up more than any other sermon that you'd had to prepare for in your whole life. You said that you'd prepared probably 200 or 300 sermons by that stage in your pastoral journey, and none of the other sermons had gone close to tearing you up as much as preparing for that one. Is that because of the connection with your mum and like knowing that she's one of those people that people will say is going to hell?
Yeah, I think so. So I think one of the realities with having these kind of conversations is that there's almost two sides of it. There's the philosophical side and talking about the idea and how interesting that is and how does this work in, and I guess a bit what we're kind of doing tonight. Yeah. And then there's like the emotional kind of side of it when you actually realize that people that you know, like this is just not just a conversation around something abstract, but this is personal. And so I'm the only Christian in my family. I've got good mates who, you know, aren't Christian, and so kind of to read on this topic, all I could see and picture were faces of people that I knew and loved, and yeah, it was actually really difficult. It was a lot harder than I thought it would be.
You've never prepared a sermon on hell, Chris?
No, I don't think I did. I've only given, you know, like 5 to 10 sermons or something as such in my whole life, not a few hundred. And they're barely sermons. It's more like get the chaplain up for a chat and here's a bit of a theme or a topic, you know. So that's I was always a bit rebellious and would sort of throw things at the congregation that probably wasn't normally said. I would like to bring like, and this is what this podcast a lot is about, is bringing up subjects and topics that I guess a lot of people think about, but, you know, usually aren't sort of spoken about in that sort of a forum. So I was really interested to hear, Maddie, that you're inviting your congregation to bring the ideas of what they want to hear about to you. So you get this topic of hell and you start researching it and you don't like what you find. And I guess I'm wondering if that, because it was like 10 years previous that you'd heard that one sermon about hell, had that been something that had stuck with you for that decade, that you hadn't really faced it or something, and there here you are having to face it?
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. I mean, that message 10 years ago really did put this, I guess, intense hatred. And I think, if I'm honest, if there was one thing about Christianity that I wish I could change and get rid of, it's this. For a long time, I just wanted to kind of walk in a confidence that I didn't have to worry about this or anything. And so when I actually got forced to face it, it was like, I need to give it my best attention, try and give it a hearing on both for and against, and trying to weigh up different things that I read. And as a Christian, the Bible is something that is pretty important. And so what does the Bible actually say about it? And so, yeah, I think it did really confront me to actually face it with a bit of impartiality instead of with that, I guess, rage of what had happened 10 years prior.
And so what did you find when you approached it that way?
I mean, even though this is what I found, there's still a part of me that's like, oh, really? But as I look through the scriptures, Jesus firstly talks about hell. I wish it was kind of, you know, the Old Testament God who's really angry and a bit crotchety and got up on the wrong side of the bed, and Jesus is really loving. And I kind of wish that that kind of came from the Old Testament, but it's actually Jesus that talked about hell, and he talked about it in the light of eternity, and that there was punishment based on how people dealt with Jesus. And I think because of that aspect, as Christians, we should really care about where so many people in our world are heading. That's kind of the, in a nutshell, what I kind of came to the conclusion of.
Why would it be different for you if it was all just the Old Testament that was talked about hell, but Jesus hadn't talked about it? Why would that be any different?
I think for me, Christianity is founded on Christ. I mean, the Old Testament points to Jesus, but I think that Jesus kind of came to, I guess, start a new thing. And so in the New Testament, I think I find that probably a lot more of this is the ethic of how we are to live now, where I think there are things in the Old Testament that for a particular people in a particular place in a particular time, that was critical for them. And so if it's Old Testament, like it, you know, came up in the book of Leviticus and everything, you can kind of brush that aside a little bit. But I mean, this is the guy who the Christian faith is really revolved around. Like, Christianity is a religion that's based on a person in Jesus Christ. And so that means you've got to at least take it seriously for mine. So I could take it, have to take that a lot more seriously than I would have probably previous.
Yeah. So one of the things you mentioned in the sermon that Jesus talked about that I found fascinating that I hadn't really thought about before was that you talked about that when Christians think about eternal life, we take that literally. We go, well, we're going to live forever. But then there's a lot of Christians that when they get to the eternal torment or eternal hell part, they take that as figuratively and they just go, well, it doesn't mean forever or it doesn't mean torment. It just means annihilation. But you brought home to me the idea that Jesus said both, and if you can't take one without the other, it doesn't make any sense that he would be talking literally about one and figuratively about the other.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. So in Matthew 25, I think it is, and there's this story where Jesus is kind of talking about those that act with justice to the poor and the hungry, that they will enter into eternal life, and those that didn't would have eternal punishment. I mean, for me, I look for ages to try and find things that, you know, maybe the punishment ends or maybe it's just wrong. But, you know, as Christians, we love the idea of eternal life. Like, no one's going to say, hang on, I don't know if that's legit. let's look into that a bit more. Yeah.
So, Chris,
yeah.
I'm interested because like, you're a Christian.
Yeah.
And I don't think you hold the same views on hell as what Maddie has been talking about here.
No, I don't. So
fight.
Oh. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. But I've sort of come to settle. I guess you could call me a bit of a universalist,
yep,
Maddie, because I remember you talking about universalism within your sermon. So Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, that's the story there. There's an interesting story about what the priest does with the goat, you know, when they pray over the goat and they put all of the people's sins onto the goat and then send that out into the wilderness. And so that's, I think that's where the term scapegoat comes from.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I think that for me, people believing in hell can be somewhat, you know, convenient in that that's a place where we can, you know, send all of these scapegoats, be they non-believers, be they illegal immigrants or African gangs, refugees, homosexuals, lefties, you know, right-wing people, people named Nick. I don't know if it's I've sort of come to not really believe in hell. And like you talked about reading, you know, Rob Bell and stuff. So he's one that's, you know, informed the way I sort of see it a lot. So I sort of believe that if there is a heaven, everyone's going to go there. But the concept of, you know, can you have one without the other is one that I do struggle with. If hell doesn't exist for me, there's heaven either. And Nick, you've spoken about heaven being a pernicious idea in the past. Do you want to unravel that idea again just for Maddie here?
So when you believe that there's an eternal paradise around the corner, it really devalues life here on earth because all of a sudden none of the stuff here matters because I'm going to be spending eternity somewhere else. So you're like, you see it most clearly in groups like ISIS where they actually believe there's an afterlife.
And so then you say that killing sends people to the afterlife, and so that worldview says, well, that's all good then.
Whereas if you believe there is no heaven, then holy heck, I need to do everything that I can to make this world the best place it is, because it's the only one we got.
And I think likewise with hell, that can be the sort of scapegoat, you know, and we can make God the scapegoat for all the evil that we see, that he's going to deal with it, whereas we need to deal with it. We're abrogating responsibility by having this place where we're going to send all of these people for eternal torment. So I can't, a judgmental God that sends people to torment in hell for eternity doesn't work for me.
But Maddie agrees with you.
I know,
He hates that hell is in the Bible. But the problem was, in doing his, you know, when you're a pastor, you don't just get to choose what you what you come up with. He actually had to look at the Bible and work out what it actually says. And when he read it, he went, holy hap, Jesus says that there is a hell. What the heck do I do with this?
But does Jesus say that God is a judgmental God that will be sending people to hell? That was one thing that you did address, Maddie. Do you want to speak to that at all? Or to anything we've had to say?
Yeah. There's a lot that's just going on. I firstly think that both of you are right, that, you know, if it's all about heaven, then that can really be an abdication of our responsibility here on earth. And I actually spoke at church this morning on the, when we make it all about either avoiding hell or getting into heaven, it actually devalues the world that we live in. And I actually think that we're called to see, I mean, Christian language is to see God's kingdom or God's reality or what he desires in this world come to fruition. We're called to partner with him to see reconciliation, to see justice, to see people enter wholeness. And, you know, I remember a conversation I had a while ago. I was trying to get a Micah challenge event going where we were kind of standing against world hunger, and I was talking to a particular church leader. And they didn't really want to commit to it. And as I pressed on, why wouldn't you want to commit to this? Why wouldn't, I think Jesus lends his voice to this. And it was this sense of, well, why spend time trying to fix this world when we're all going to get taken to heaven? You know, the scapegoats are going to get pushed to hell and the world's going to get burned up. And I just think that's a horrendous application of scripture. And so I can see where both of you are coming from in that respect.
Why do you think it's bad to devalue life here if there is an eternal heaven? Like, what's wrong with going around and setting off bombs if there is, like, it'll harm my eternal future, but it's doing good things to the people that I kill. It's the ultimate sacrifice.
It's just thou shalt not kill.
Unless you don't really believe it. And I think that's what most people, like, they actually don't believe it. But, like, they believe it intellectually, but they don't believe it anywhere else.
Sure.
Fundamental sort of beliefs. Do people really believe those fundamental beliefs? They, you know, like their child breaks their arm, are they just going to pray for God to heal it, or will they go and take that child to the doctor? So, you know, so the ones that really believe it.
That's scary.
They're scary, yeah. So there's a lot of beliefs that we have that, you know, how much do we really believe them? And like you've said before, Nick, if you really believe in this hell thing, you know, why shouldn't you be standing on a street corner yelling at people trying to save every last person that walks past? Which I think is a terrible strategy, because I think that's very ineffective and turns more people away than you're going to turn towards you.
But just sitting at home doing a podcast every night doesn't do anything either.
So, Maddie, you believe that there is a hell and that is a destination.
Yeah.
So how do you get there? Better still, how do you avoid it?
I guess for mine, in regards to the question you asked about, you know, God sending people to hell. I mean, I don't think that God created hell for people. Like, I don't think he created Adam and Eve and went, well, if this goes pear-shaped, God will need a backup plan. I'll make hell and then send everyone that goes wrong there. Mm. It's in Matthew 25, in my reading, it's Jesus is now talking to the goats of people who did not feed the hungry, clothe the poor. And Jesus says, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Hell was created first and foremost for Satan and the punishment of that. And so in conjunction to that, I think, is that I don't think God sends people to hell. I think it breaks his heart when people go to hell. That's my thought. And I think there was a quote that I read by a guy named G.K. Chesterton. He basically said that hell is the dignity of God allowing humans free will. And so the idea that every single day we have an opportunity, and I get that some people have more opportunities than others, that we have opportunities to know God, understand the goodness of the gifts that he has given us. And we can either say yes or we can say no to God and who he is. And I guess as we accumulate that, those no's over, say, an 80-year life, hell is really God honoring the wish of people who have said no to him their entire life, giving them what they want. That would be, that's where I came to on that. And I realize there's a whole lot of different things that can be talked about and asked questions in that, but that's where I landed.
But that makes sense if annihilation is true. If it was just annihilation, that non-believers just cease to exist, then, you know, that would make perfect sense. But if it's that they actually get tormented for eternity, which seems to be what you said Jesus was saying, I don't see how that makes sense with a loving God. If it's annihilation, that makes sense. If you get a second chance after you die and you see the full beauty of God, that makes sense. That's why universalism and annihilation both make sense to me. But like you said, they're not in the Bible.
Yeah, which is a tricky thing because they are preferable options for me as well. Like if I'm going to be honest, they would be a lot easier to explain, a lot easier to understand, and a lot easier to articulate. Probably wouldn't be on a podcast like this though. The reality is I think hell is a really repulsive idea. I think that's one of the things that I struggled with for so long is that there's no way to glam it up as, oh, no, no, it's pretty good. Like, it's horrific. And I think one of the things that I read and it played on my mind a bit was that just because something is repulsive doesn't make it untrue, I guess. And it really does in a Western culture where love and acceptance and tolerance are really big driving factors. Hell is about the worst thing. It's the peak of judgmentalism, and I can understand why it's one of those topics that, I mean, I think I'd be in a minority for a lot of the people in our culture. I think in a Western culture, we look at it and go, how can this be bad? I think of, Christianity has come from a whole lot of other different particular cultures. And, I mean, I think the idea of hell, if it wasn't there, if there wasn't this fact of justice that comes in, but for many other cultures where there is child slavery and incredible amounts of raping in different places. And I think it would be the flip side. People go, well, if God's not going to punish that, then how could this God be loving? There's an interesting quote by a guy named Miroslav Volf. He said, it takes the quiet of a suburban home to birth the idea that God refuses to judge. That when you actually see the evil that is in the world that is a present-day reality for many, many people, then a God who refuses to step in and judge, that doesn't seem like a loving God as well.
But the problem with that is I don't think anyone is suggesting that it's good if there is eternal, or not eternal, but there is some sort of judgment after we die.
Yep.
The problem I have, and I think other people would have, and probably you yourself have, is that it's eternal and it's torment. Like, if someone does a crime, there should be a punishment, but it should be representative for what the crime was.
Yeah.
And so if someone's raping, 50 kids a day, there should be punishment. But the point of the punishment is to try and redeem that person, to try and get them to go, holy hat, I did something awful and I need to change. And so that's where universalism is good, because you're giving people the opportunity to see what they've done is wrong and to actually have a real change of heart and go, I'm never doing that again. I finally understand what I did wrong. And they still have that chance to become people like Jesus. And that's also where annihilation is good, because if it doesn't last forever, they have their period of a good amount of justice, then brilliant. Like, I like the idea of justice. I don't want people just getting off scot-free. But there is no part of me that wants, even someone as awful as Hitler or whoever the worst person you can imagine is, I don't want him tormented forever. I want him to see what he did was wrong. Because it does no good for those people that were killed or tortured or whatever for further pain to be inflicted. The thing you want is for people to be redeemed, for salvation. That's the good parts of Christianity.
Yeah.
And so annihilation and universalism are brilliant. The idea that it's just because we're in the West and we have lovely lives and we don't want to see people judged. I do want to see people judged. I just don't want them to be eternally tormented.
Yeah. I think even in the words that you use in regards to eternal and torment, I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that comes into play there as well, because I think we do want justice, and I would never try and tell you that you didn't want justice or anything. But I think with crime, like, it's the things that kind of determine the punishment of a crime is often the weight of the crime and who the crime is against. So I've never murdered someone. I don't know how long that would take. I'm guessing depending on how, like, if it took someone a few minutes to kill someone, we don't say, well, you know, took you a few minutes to kill someone, we're going to punish you for a few minutes. That'll make it even. That would be barbaric. That's not how it goes. And so it's really based on, I guess, the weight of that crime. And I think that's where the eternal side comes into it, is because sin is, we can often, I think, downplay, sorry, I'm trying to get out of the habit of saying we as if we're all in the same, I can downplay sin. This is just a little white lie or anything, but it's when we're actually, I guess, sinning against an eternal God. If there is a God, and this God is eternal and all-powerful, and this God has created us, and we as his creation rebel, then we are rebelling against an eternal God, which makes that rebellion take on an element of eternal nature. And so that's, for me, I don't say I love that, but that's how I can logically get to regards to the eternity side of things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I found that really interesting because, you know, a lot of why I wanted to call this podcast the Eternity Ward is because I have issues with how a lot of Christianity views eternity, in that, you know, often they're focusing on this life that comes after, and be that heaven or hell. And I think Jesus talks a lot about, you know, the kingdom of heaven being as in this present moment. And so eternity for me is focusing on, you know, not what comes after. It's about focusing on now. And so there are eternal moments now.
Yes. Yep.
For me, an eternal moment is when you're, you know, essentially in harmony with God. But it's interesting you're saying, you know, there is an eternal moment when you're separated from God. Yeah. So I just found that interesting and surprising. But I often wonder, is hell, is it real, or is this a creation of religion, you know, in an attempt to control people? Because I think to deal with the evil that's in the world, that's our responsibility, you know, and they're the eternal things that we're fighting for. So it's, for me, it's about, you know, our choices, our actions, they all have consequences, I guess, both now and into eternity. But is there a place where people go, see, it doesn't work for me? And like you in your sermon were talking about the struggle of coming to terms with that because of your friends and your family and you know, you picturing them in this eternal torment. So I'm like, how do you reconcile that there may be people that you love going to that place? Wouldn't you just walk away from a God that has that as part of his creation? Because I know, you know, Nick, you've said before that if that's what God is, then you don't want any part of that.
If God is an arsehole, I do not want to follow him. Like, yeah, it's one of the things that shocks me that people hold these views of God where God is this judgmental, vindictive, violent, sexist guy. And I'm like, yeah, he might be. You know, I mean, I don't know if there's a God or not. If there is, he may well be all of those things. But I'm certainly not going to follow him. I'm certainly not going to worship him.
Yep.
So, like, yeah, like, I was interested in that question too, Chris. Like, so you talked about, Maddie, in your sermon that, you know, like the idea that your family would be in hell just breaks you in two. And you talked about the idea that how could you possibly enjoy being in heaven when you know that that's going on for the people you love? So like, what keeps you, why don't you just walk away? Like, if you read the Bible and go, holy hat, it does say that. Like, what makes you go, well, I'm sticking with it, but even though I don't like it, what brings you to it? Because that's one of the things that makes me go, no, I'm out.
Sure. For me, and there's a passage in 2 Peter that talks about that the Lord is patient and not wanting anyone to perish. And so that's my fundamental belief of God, is that he is love. And I got to be honest, I still wrestle with how that fits in with hell, even though I've preached a sermon on it, and it's still one of those gnawing things of like, I have conversations with my friends and we come and we talk about this. I don't think I'm ever going to be 100% okay with the reality of it. I think if I believe, and I can understand, I think in The God Delusion, Richard Dawkins, I think the beginning of one of his chapters has this description of basically what he sees when he looks at the God of the Bible. And it was the stuff that you guys said before, like, you know, sexist, misogynist, you know, calls genocide. And if that is his character, then yeah, I'm out. But I don't see that as the core of who God is. That's what keeps me in there. And I think that God loves my family and doesn't want them to go to that place. And there's a certain weight, I think, on my shoulders. I don't fully know if they know any other Christian people besides me. But the fact that I'm in that family, I think there's something on me as well to share that love with them. So I think that's what keeps me going, is trusting that God is not an asshole and that he is a God of love. That's what keeps me going.
That's one of the things I said to Dad last week, that I sort of cut out the middleman. Like, for me, I'm following love. That's the master value that I hold. And so if there's stuff in the Bible that's contrary to love, then I go, well, I don't care that it's in there. It means nothing to me because love is the thing that I follow. Mm-hmm. What do you reckon about that?
I mean, the interesting thing is, I think in our culture, love has so many uses. Like, for me, I love my wife and I love Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad is an awesome show, but I use the same word for both. And I love my daughter and I love nachos. And I think in our world, love can get thrown around as a lot of, hey, that's what I'm about. Love gets thrown around in a whole lot of different ways. And so I think I'm all for pursuing love as long as that love is worth pursuing.
But then you also said in your sermon that hell is a destination for people who don't know Jesus. And so it seems that the label of Jesus, like actually mapping on love to Jesus, is really important if you want to avoid hell. You can't just be a good person. You can't just love everyone and treat everyone beautifully. You can't be Mahatma Gandhi. You actually have to, you know, bow your head and get on a knee and say, Jesus is my Lord and Savior.
Yeah. And so for me, I guess that comes from, if there is a God who did create the world, if there is a God that did create me, then that means I'm not my own. This is how I see it, at least, that there is a degree of allegiance. I don't think we go to hell necessarily for the bad things. And this might have been what you were talking about, because I think with court cases, you know, you've got a judge, and if someone is standing for charges of rape and murder, the judge doesn't go, okay, well, yeah, you did rape and you did murder, but you also coached your kids' basketball team, you helped old ladies across the road. Like, they don't weigh up the good and the bad and say, look, actually, the good kind of outweighs. There's more good than these two bad things, so I'll let you free. And what is judged in that moment is the infraction. And I think the infraction for mine is that if God has created me, it's, I guess, me doing divine plagiarism, saying, no, my life is my own, when it's actually, I think, a life that has been given to me by God. And that's where I would see that coming in.
And naming up Jesus is critical.
Like, I can only speak for myself personally, but for me, it's critical because I see in the Bible that Jesus is the visible image of this invisible God who has created all things. And it's Jesus who came to earth to give his life as a ransom for many. So I think acknowledging that reality and acknowledging that it was Jesus that did that, I think that's what makes that key for me.
So if you were born before Jesus was around, that wouldn't be important. So Jesus coming actually made it harder for people to enter salvation?
In Romans 3, there's a bit where it talks about, it was one of my favorite passages, but I didn't actually fully understand the next part of it, but it starts off by saying, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Like, every single person has made mistakes, fallen short. And I don't think that's anything that anyone would argue with. I know for myself that, you know, I want to be better, but I know I'm not the best version of myself that I can be. That says that all of us are justified, or I guess that's churchy language for made right with God through Jesus. And it goes on to talk about how the sacrifice of Jesus has this rippling effect through past and future as well. And so the people of the Old Testament who trusted God, who obeyed God, but Jesus hadn't come yet, Jesus has covered those who came before. If that makes sense.
Yep.
So that's how I understand that.
Yeah, my understanding too. But my understanding goes to, you know, being a universalist, grace goes to everyone.
Yeah.
because we are a product of our own biology and environment and everything. So I was born in Australia. I had Christian parents, you know, so it's pretty straightforward that I became a Christian. But, you know, when it says that Jesus is the only way to God, I did like what you had to say in your sermon, but there are many ways to Jesus. Because, you know, to imagine someone who was brought up in, you know, the Amazon jungle and had never heard the gospel, to imagine someone who was born into a different religion, it is a Hindu, say, or to, like, I went and saw Hannah Gadsby last night, and she's someone who was born in Australia discovered that she was a lesbian, and, you know, back in Tasmania in that time, that was illegal, you know, and she was beaten, she was raped. And so how does someone like that, when the concept of Christianity has done so much damage to, how can you expect her to accept Christianity? Yeah. But she can still live a life full of love. And so for me, I don't really care what you call it, but I think there are many ways.
Yeah.
So I don't think getting down on a knee and saying, hey, you know, is essential. So I don't know.
Yeah, I can understand that. I remember, like, C.S. Lewis in, I think it's The Last Battle, and I'm probably going to butcher this story because I haven't actually read it for a very long time. I think there's Aslan and then there's this other god, Tash, and there's this dude who has been serving Tash wholeheartedly. And I think C.S. Lewis kind of takes this view, and I think it's a really interesting one, that Aslan confronts Tash and this guy who's been worshipping Tash, and the guy thinks he's going to get owned by Aslan. And Aslan said, look, the service that you gave to them, I saw that as service to me, because you didn't have the full revelation of who I was. You didn't have the opportunity. And I think that's a really interesting idea. It's one that I want to think about that more, and I can't, but I think that's fair. And this is actually something I read in the last few weeks. So I'm happy to tease this out as well, but, like, there was this guy who writing about hell said that in regards to, you know, people in countries where, you know, as Christians we would call them less reached countries and people groups who have not heard the gospel and everything. And this guy said that there are script Bible verses that seem to say that there is, I guess, it's not a one-size-fits-all judgment. There were those that it would be more bearable for, because they knew more than others, which I think is a really interesting idea that Jesus kind of brings out. And that's one I don't know too much about. But this idea that always struck me as harsh, like, what about the person who is not a Christian country, not a Christian family, has not had those opportunities, and they die and they go to hell? It's like, surprise, burn. Like, is, like, that's something that I've always struggled with. But that idea that, based on knowledge and how much access you have, that there could be varying levels. Like, that's something I've just come up and I kind of wish I'd discovered it weeks or months ago so I could have more to say about it. But that's an idea that I actually really warm to.
Yeah. So would I have been better off if I hadn't have heard the gospel then? It would be a lot easier.
Well, that is one of the things about that, I guess, that I kind of wrestle with. Like, oh, so should we just stop evangelizing? Like, why introduce someone, give them more knowledge to give them more judgment if they're not going to accept? Let's just keep our mouth shut. So that's the part of me that goes, oh, I don't know what to do with that. But it's an idea that I want to explore a bit more.
Yeah, because I don't evangelize. I don't actually try and save people from hell, because I actually think it's potentially an abusive thing to tell someone that they are going to hell. I think it's spiritually abusive. Mm. So I like it. You were saying before, Jesus was saying that those who hadn't looked after the poor, who hadn't looked after the sick, he didn't say that the person that was going to hell was the one that didn't stand on the street corner and try and save everyone. It was those who didn't help the poor and didn't help the sick. So for me, I'm trying, my faith informs me to help people in a practical way, not so much in a spiritual way.
Yeah. Well, I think for mine, mate, I think that kind of stuff is a spiritual thing. And I think Christians do a real disservice to, when they talk about sharing the gospel and make it all about, like, the words of, if you don't trust Jesus, you'll go here. Or I think all of social justice and caring for people and sharing through word and deed, I think, is really, really important.
You're right, that it is a spiritual thing, but I'm not trying to save them in some sort of spiritual battle, but it is for me, that is the essence of what spirituality is.
I resonate with you a bit. And I mean, I think I've always struggled with evangelism, and it's something I've often felt guilty about in a way of, like, you know, not being able to go to someone I've never met before on the street and tell them, do you know Jesus? It's something I've always felt uncomfortable with. And, you know, when I was a non-Christian, people would do that to me. I was like, get away from me.
Yeah.
That was well, something that I just...
Yeah. I don't think it works. I think you need to, if you're going to talk to anyone about anything at this sort of level, then there needs to be a relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's for me. I think if the conversation comes up, I'm more than happy, and I don't try and hide the fact that I'm a Christian, or... And I never really see it, I guess, as trying to keep people from hell, even though I think there's an urgency for me in why I talk to people and have spiritual conversations. But for me, it's inviting them, I think, into a way of life and to introduce them to this guy, Jesus, that has radically changed my life for the better. Hell doesn't really, I think it's got to be a background thing for a Christian and not a foreground thing. Like, I don't ever want to lead off in my conversations with people with, you know, you're going to hell if you don't listen to this message and accept. But I think for me, knowing that this is a potential for someone that I love and I don't want it to be, pushes me into situations of loving and caring. And I don't know if that makes sense.
No, but yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yep.
So something I'm getting more and more confused about, I thought in your sermon that you were saying that you really had to name the name of Jesus, that hell is a destination for people who don't know Jesus, whereas just then it seemed like you were saying that it's really the values of Jesus and, you know, the life that he lived, the lifestyle that he tried to display, that if people are living that sort of lifestyle, then that is a Christian lifestyle, even if they don't name it to Jesus. How do you see that?
You've brought up a very good point. That's how I see that. I'm going to have to think through that a bit more, because I do think living the lifestyle is good. Yeah, absolutely. And I want to call people into a way of living that does do that. But yeah, I still see the name of Jesus as an important. I think you've probably touched on something that I've always wrestled with, is that why not people who just do good? And I think that's something that is probably for me, something like I really need to think through that more, I guess. So I'd have to say I don't know if that I don't know if that's
perfect
a really
answer.
Crappy answer. Yeah, sorry.
No, yeah. I love I don't knows. Mm. Like Chris and I have talked about this before. We hate when people pretend to have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I don't know anything. Like, that's one of the things that struck me in your sermon, was the humility that you had.
Yeah.
That you were just upfront in saying how difficult a topic this is. And you've even talked about tonight that, you know, if you could, you'd throw it away. Like, you hate this idea that hell is a real destination for people that all of us love. I don't know is a perfect answer.
Good.
We all need to get better at saying I don't know, myself included.
Yeah, but I know the answer.
Well, I've got a question for you actually, Chris.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
Maddie has given biblical underpinnings for the things that he's come across. You just go universalism, baby. I love it. Where is your scriptural underpinnings?
Yeah, well, I mean, to get to where I get to, I have to devalue scripture somewhat to get there, which, you know, I'm finding easier and easier to do, to be honest. It's just, but being a Christian, being a follower of Christ, you know, so it's one thing to dismiss parts of the Bible, and I do value the Bible. I want to say I hold it in high regard, but I can't say that I hold it in as high regard as those that believe, in a sense, that it's the word of God, you know. So for me, I hold it in high regard as these amazing stories and narratives and poems and so on that express the human condition and that express this relationship, this understanding, this desire towards God. But for me, a lot of the people we've mentioned, C.S. Lewis, I love what C.S. Lewis has had to, you know, say on heaven and hell and on Christianity. So what makes him any less relevant a speaker on this subject than those that wrote within the Bible? For me, nothing. He's as valid as anyone else. But the person who I can't devalue if I'm a follower of Christ is Jesus. So the words of Jesus are the ones that they're really what I'm interested in hearing.
Yeah, but except Jesus didn't write the books of the Bible.
No, but they're reporting on what he said.
Like 30 years later.
Yeah.
Tell me something someone said 30 years ago.
So, for one thing, we've got four Gospels, you know, so there's a data set. We've said that before, you know, so we're not just going from one book. We have a whole bunch of witnesses to, you know, certain events and so on.
They're contradictory.
Some are contradictory.
They get
sure.
stuff wrong.
Yeah, sure. But there is this underlying, I would think that if you were going to be recording the words of Jesus and you believed at that point that he was the Son of God, then you're going to try to be pretty darn accurate. You know, I don't think you're going to be wanting to make stuff up. If you believe that that is God, then you know that that judgment's coming for you if you're making stuff up. Anyway, so I trust as much as I can the words of Jesus, and I can't devalue that. So they're the words that are going to rock me more than any others. But for me, it was, you know, a lot of what I get out of that is I see him talking about now. I think Jesus was turning a lot of everything within the Old Testament on its head, turning it upside down. And as you said something earlier, Maddie, about bringing a new understanding, and this was one of love. And my understanding of, I was going to say my experiences of, but that's another whole story, but is one of love. And it's really hard to have a hell in there. Now, if you can't have, you know, heaven without a hell, that then raises some other questions. And, you know, so maybe heaven isn't what we think it is either then, you know, if hell doesn't exist.
So you'd be more willing to throw out heaven than you would be to allow for the existence of hell?
I don't know. You like those I don't know answers, don't you? I don't know, but religion is the opiate of the masses. It's something that people can use to numb the real pain of living. And I'm interested in like Dietrich Bonhoeffer's version of a religionless Christianity, where in a sense you sort of, you give up the God and the heaven and the hell, and within doing that, within living with your neighbor, within caring for the poor, within, you know, just living for love, that's when you live most fully before God. I like that concept. But I, you know, I can't get away from Jesus and this idea that God exists in some eternal place, and that we are creatures who have this link to the eternal. And so maybe we don't end, but I don't want to be focusing on what comes next. I think we miss now when we do that. But I find it really interesting to talk about. But it's in my day-to-day life, how do I live most fully? I don't know.
We're probably getting to the point where we need to start wrapping it up, Chris. But I liked what you talked about there, because I think all of us, regardless of what we think happens after we die, I think all of us agree that the most important thing is the here and now, that we need to be doing whatever we can to be making this world the best place it can be. Because if there's an afterlife, then God is pulling you in that direction of making this world a better place, of seeing his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. And if you think that all of this is just all there is, then you've also got the same motivation to make this world the best place you can. So I liked how you phrased that, Chris.
Cool. Did Maddie like
it? Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think for me, going through the process of reading and preparing for that message probably has left a pretty decent mark in me, and a greater compassion and love for people. And so understanding that there is an eternal reality at play, that I think God desires that every single person be with him. But to know that there may be some that aren't, I think does, I guess, like you mentioned, propel me to do as much as I can now to see people's lives conform to Jesus, because I think Jesus provides us with the best way to live. And it's really interesting to me that like you said, like, you know, it's a motivation for, if this life is all it is, let's make it the best that we can. And I think can go to the same place. I don't think it necessarily, there are some people that just go, well, let me get all that I can and just enjoy it. And but I don't think that's a good way of living either. So I think the desire to see God's kingdom come is probably, this hell thing has birthed a greater desire for that. I guess for now, as hard as it is, and as much as I'm probably never going to be fully okay with it, I can see fruit of goodness.
Cool. Well, if you enjoyed hearing Maddie's perspective on things, drop along to Summer Hill Baptist Church on a Sunday or go along to the Elfin Sports Centre on whatever the heck night they play basketball there and watch him
start a brawl.
Watch him stay on the bench while he lets the rest of his teammates go and intervene. Are there places online where people can keep in touch with Summer Hill Baptist Church or with your sermons are there any other things you do online that people could keep in touch with?
So Summer Hill Baptist www.eternitywatch.org.au is where all the messages can be found free of charge. And we have a Facebook page that talks about a lot of what we do in the community. For me, this is actually going to serve as a bit of a motivator. I've been thinking of starting, I guess, a blog with some of my thoughts, but haven't really got past the, that'd be an interesting idea. So there's some, that's something that I would love to do that I can keep you guys informed of. I'm hopefully going to start that in the next few months so I can put that out there if anyone's interested. So,
yeah, if you start a podcast, we'll join.
Yeah, sweet. Nice.
Thank you for coming on, Maddie.
No, thank you so much for having me. I've appreciated the conversation. It's been great.
Cool.
Yeah. Cheers, Maddie.
And thanks for listening again to the Eternity Ward. We'll catch you next week. Cheerio.
Well.
Yeah, you get the last word, Maddie.
Oh. Bye, everyone.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.